Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Last week, U.S. wildlife officials recommended that 22 animals and one plant within the U.S. and Guam be marked extinct, gone forever. In total, the extinctions include 8 freshwater mussels, 11 birds, 2 fish, a bat, and a plant. And one of those now extinct birds is the ivory-billed woodpecker. Thanks to archive recordings from the Macaulay Library at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, we can still hear the sounds of that woodpecker. For more on this extinction crisis, we turn to Katherine Einhorn, who covers wildlife and extinction for the New York Times. Welcome to the show, Katherine.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is happening here? Why are species becoming extinct?
It's really because humans are changing the planet so drastically, right? I think that when we think of environmental crises, everyone's brain right now goes to climate change. And of course, that is a major environmental crisis. But there's another one, and that's a real crisis of biodiversity loss. Extinction rates are accelerating. So they're like 1,000 times above what they would naturally be, what would happen, you know, if species were just naturally occasionally going extinct. And that's because humans are basically taking away the habitat of animals. That's the major, major driving factor. It's not climate change yet, although it may become climate change down the road, right? And climate change is already adding to the problem. But the major thing is farming, logging, mining, overfishing at sea. And basically, we're just taking up so much room on this planet that animals don't have enough space left.
Okay. This might seem obvious, but I'm genuinely curious. How do I know if an animal or a plant is extinct? I have to say, my daughter's in second grade and they're studying birds and she's really into woodpeckers. Like, this is the bird that she's really chosen to obsess over at 7 years old. And when I learned that the ivory-billed woodpecker was one of the birds that had become extinct, I felt it like in my stomach. But I also wondered, how would you know?
It's hard, right? Because you wouldn't necessarily know. You know, if we didn't have scientists studying these things, we wouldn't know. And one of the major concerns that scientists have is that species are blinking out that we haven't even registered. I mean, there are so many species that science, Western science, hasn't even identified yet. And so, you know, do we even know what animals are going extinct? It's really leading scientists are very concerned about that. So with the ivory bill, this is a bird that was already quite rare by the turn of the century, by, say, you know, the 1930s. And that's because European colonists and their descendants logged the areas where the ivory bills lived. And so as those areas were logged, the birds became fewer and fewer. And then there's this heartbreaking story that happened where in like the 1930s, 1940s, some ivory bills were found in Louisiana in this tract of land they called the Singer Tract, I believe, because it may have been owned by like the Singer Sewing Machine Company. Mm-hmm. But then it somehow was transferred to like the Chicago Lumber and Mill Company. I'm not sure if I'm getting the name exactly right. But conservationists begged that lumber company not to log this land because they had found these ivory bills there. And they went ahead and did it. And that was before the Endangered Species Act. So now there is a law on the books which protects the habitat of threatened and endangered animals. But that protection wasn't in place for the ivory bill. And although some birders are convinced and still deeply believe that they have seen ivory bills in Arkansas very recently, federal officials just think that, you know, the best available science shows that they're extinct.
This is the sound of a Bachman warbler. It's another bird that U.S. wildlife officials say should be marked as extinct. And though there are protections for endangered species, Katherine told me there's been an acceleration of the loss of species.
Well, first of all, this is a global acceleration, right? And the Endangered Species Act is a more stringent law than most countries have on the books. But even within the United States, there's a lot of concern that while the Endangered Species Act can provide life support for animals and has had some incredible success stories in bringing animals back, like the black-footed ferret or the California condor, nevertheless, there are so many species that are suffering For example, recently, federal officials announced that monarch butterflies are threatened and should be on the endangered species list, but they're basically kind of like on the waiting list because there's not enough resources to get them on the list.
Wait, monarch butterflies? Monarch butterflies?
Yeah, their populations are really plummeting. Yeah, especially the Western ones. Those are in terrible shape. I mean, that's like a 99% decline. I mean, that's really bad. But most monarchs, the Eastern monarchs, are the ones that overwinter in Mexico, you know, and they do this just incredible multi-generational migration between, you know, Northern United States and Canada, all the way down to Mexico and back. And those butterflies are also showing really steep declines. And that's a combination of habitat change. So partly it's that, you know, milkweed is the only food that monarch caterpillars can eat. And milkweed grows naturally all over North America. But when farmers started using Roundup, so the corn and the soy is genetically modified to resist the Roundup. It can resist the spraying, but obviously the milkweed is not. And so where it used to grow alongside those crops, it eliminated huge swaths of habitat. And so now people are planting milkweed to try and provide food, you know, in their, on their balconies, in their backyards, wherever it may be. And that's been a huge movement and it's great. But, you know, what scientists say is like, you're taking two steps forward and one step back, because then you also have the problem of climate change. So there are increased storms and drought that they're very vulnerable to.
So look, nothing would make me happier than just ranting maybe for the next 7 to 10 minutes about Roundup and about, you know, the effects. But I want to just like come to this. Farmers use what they have to use in order to grow crops, to feed people, and to try to turn at least some kind of profit, or to look to break even. That's kind of, you know, farm life. No one's getting rich off of that. How do we balance something like the need for the monarch to have this milkweed to move across generations in this migration, and also to feed humans on the planet and for people to live above a level of subsistence?
This is the big question. And, you know, monarchs are one example, but like this is the problem of the biodiversity crisis in a much bigger way. And what these leading international panels of scientists who study this would say is we really need to change the way that we do agriculture, both in terms of moving more to regenerative agriculture, but also changing the way that we eat. Like we can't eat as intensively as we do in terms of the amount of meat that we eat ends up taking up such a big footprint. And it's not allowing enough space for the rest of the species on this planet, which, you know, our survival ultimately does depend on them or is interlinked with them. You know, we're talking about sort of this almost like a competition between mm-hmm. agriculture and wild areas, but ultimately we rely on nature for our very survival. In other words, wetlands filter and restore groundwater. Pollinators pollinate our food. If we start seeing ecosystem collapse, it's going to affect us. So there are very selfish reasons that humans should be concerned about the biodiversity crisis.
Can you say a little more about the specifics of how that works? So I can hear right now the conversation that happens when I say a plant became extinct. I mean, I can see this sort of, you know, blank-eyed, so why do I care if a plant became extinct? Why do I care if Bachman's warbler is extinct? What difference does that make to me?
Right. And, you know, at the individual species level, I think that there's so much that researchers still don't know about this really intricate dance that ecosystems do. And so, you know, Bachman's warbler has been gone for some time, it seems. The ecosystem is not collapsing. So I don't know that there is a practical argument for that particular species. Of course, when you talk about too many species disappearing from an ecosystem, that's when you start really setting yourself up for some bigger problems. But apart from sort of the practical human-centered argument, I think that there are also moral arguments about our place on this earth. And, you know, it's interesting because people have such, now that I cover this, you know, people have such different reactions, because some people just like you, express such dismay at the thought of, oh my God, we drove this species to extinction. This is this, you know, result of untold years of evolution. And they have all these fascinating behaviors and characteristics that that are now gone. And other people are like, so what? You know, I told someone, I was talking about cheetahs and how cheetahs are just really doing terribly. Their numbers are plummeting. And they were like, who cares if cheetahs go extinct? And I thought, huh, like, well, they're the fastest land mammal. I mean, they're so iconic in some way. And I don't really know how to respond to that other than, I don't know, like, do you care about art? Do you care about, it gets to sort of, at some point, I'm not totally sure how to communicate the importance of a cheetah to someone who doesn't think that cheetahs are worth anything or valuable to save.
Katrin Einhorn covers wildlife and extinction for the New York Times.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.